Welcome back to I Love That For You, the podcast celebrating the late bloomers and trailblazers of all walks of life. I'm Kelly.
And I'm Red.
And Red, we're in March already. Where the hell has the year
gone? We're like, what is this, a quarter of the way through the year already? Yeah. And I'm like, wait, what?
How are your goals coming along? Have you started learning sign language? I mean, no. Obviously, the answer is no. You haven't had time. Why am I even asking you?
Actually, I have learned a couple little signs, but they're more of just like inappropriate things.
Well, that's the most important, obviously.
Right, exactly. Obviously, I can't really do for the podcast because
no, it doesn't translate.
No, unfortunately. Sorry to our those who are hard of hearing or have hearing issues and things like that. So I'm so sorry that we cannot be inclusive of that in this forum. Although who knows? Maybe I'll put up a video of me. Well, then we'll get flagged because things. Yeah.
Patreon.
You'll just have to take my word for it.
Take your word for it. She's learning. But yeah, already in March, it's already like we're in end of Q1. Like what is happening? Not that we're in the corporate world anymore. We don't have to worry
about
that.
I was about to say, we don't have to worry about our quarterlies yet for the podcast because we're not quite there yet. But
not yet. We're gonna be an empire. We're gonna be like Call Her Daddy. We're coming after her. Come on, Red. We're gonna overtake Call Her Daddy.
Actually, so a little behind the scenes, we actually had a really good heart to heart.
We did.
About just because there's so much going on in both our lives and trying to, again, people, you don't understand how much work doing a podcast is until you do it. And then you're like, oh my God. So between both of us trying to balance our lives between work, school, relationships, friendships, you know, just life in general and all our creative projects, it's been really tough. And that's why we needed to have like a good discussion. And I think we had it in a pretty healthy, not like a, you bitch, like none of that was happening.
I mean, there has been those moments where we've wanted to do that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, let's not kid ourselves. But the thing is,
respectful.
But the thing is, like, at the end of the day, this whole podcast, what matters is our friendship. So we reserve the right. Sorry, guys, but we reserve the right. If things are ever getting to a point where our friendship is getting affected by this, y'all are going to have us like, you know, we might have to, if we take a beat, we take a beat. But we will be back because we love you guys and we love each other. But we are not planning on that happening anytime soon.
No,
but we are just saying, I think sometimes when we talk about success and things like that of different projects, I think sometimes people see it as a failure if you admit to, oh, it's not easy. And there is a struggle to get it to a place that you want it to be. But if you really care about something and you care about the people you do it with, you're going to make sure that you have that balance.
Absolutely. And
because it's not like everybody has it. Some people do, but not everybody has it handed to them and has it easy. And people have to really fight to get to where their level of success is sometimes.
Well,
so,
and that's a good segue into just real quick, this upcoming Sunday is the Oscars. And I'm sure many friendships will be tested, Red, and success won and lost because we have, I think the front runner is Oppenheimer. Did you see Oppenheimer?
I did not see Oppenheimer.
Okay, you didn't miss much, but it's probably going to win. But the whole, did you see Barbie? You didn't see anything. I'm just going to assume you didn't see
anything. I didn't see. I have to admit, like, when we were talking about trying to set this one up, Kelly was asking me, like, oh, okay, so you know what's going on, like, with the, and I'm like,
no. Yeah, right? No.
Which is wild because we used to both be so plugged into the industry. Like,
I mean,
you still are.
You have a life.
No, it's not that I have a life. I'm just, for now, I have to focus on things outside of the industry to focus on doing school so that I could come back to the industry and do makeup.
Right.
For them and then be plugged back in, but
and then you'll
for
win
now
for your makeup
exactly
Calvin screenplay
and the two of us will go up for our acceptance speeches and thank each other for being patient as we try and figure this shit out.
Exactly. This upcoming Sunday is the Oscars. I think Oppenheimer's gonna win. There was a whole hoopla about, which you saw that online at least.
Everybody
was upset that Barbie was snubbed and Gosling was nominated, and we're living the whole narrative of Barbie out in real time. But I personally think that my favorite was American Fiction. If I'm gonna put some stuff up on the Instagram, but let me know what your favorite movie was. But I think that movie was by far my favorite, but it probably won't win. Past Lives, also, if you want a good cry, very end of it, you'll bawl your eyes out. So highly
what
recommend
was the
that,
name
one.
Of that one.
It's called Past Lives, and it is definitely, it's a sleeper, but I think think it was my second favorite. So that is all I have to say on that. But I'm bringing this up because today's person does tie into the Hollywood system and actually is inspired by the last track on Taylor Swift's upcoming album from the Tortured Poets Department. And I keep calling it Dead Poets Society, and I know I'm not alone. And also, you think I'm like the biggest Swiftie because I mention her so much on here, but I'm not. Don't come at me. Like, I respect her. She's a hustler. She's yeah. got drive.
Please don't have the Swifties come after yeah. us. Please don't.
I appreciate her, but she just happens to be everywhere. And she's so hard to escape on the feed. Like, Mother Algorithm is serving me all the Tay-Tay content. Mm-hmm. But to that point, if you've been online in recent weeks and you've seen her track list, you already know who I'm gonna say who this is about. So today I'm gonna profile one of the biggest female stars of the 1920s who appeared in 46 silent films, 11 talkies, came to personify the roaring 20s as its leading sex symbol, and coined the term the it girl, Clara Bow.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, hold
right.
up.
This is something right up your alley, by the
way. I was about to say, like, what is happening right now? Because we go from me doing Snoop Dogg and Martha we're going back to the 1920s. Did we switch? Did we do a body switch?
It's crazy because she is like literally right up your alley.
I know.
Like makeup, like vibe, like everything.
I'm a massive fan. So I cannot wait to get into this because.
Much about her, mm-hmm. but I understand why Taylor wrote, you know, about her, because she is the world's current it girl, and Clara was the original it girl, and she is the last track on her upcoming album. So I'm like, I had to learn more about her. So you probably already know a lot about her, but I'm gonna give our audience a little dive, and you can add in what you know.
Okay.
So Clara Bow was born in Prospect Heights, Brooklyn, in a bleak, sparsely furnished room above a dilapidated Baptist church on July 29th, 1905. Now, she was her parents' third child, but her two older sisters had died in infancy. Very sad. Mm. And her mom was gorgeous. Her name was Sarah Frances Bow, and she was told by a doctor not to become pregnant again for fear that the next baby might die as well.
Wow.
But despite that, Sarah became pregnant with Clara in late 1904 during a heat wave,
No.
So she defied the odds twice over, and Clara was born healthy, but reportedly her mom's first words after Clara's birth were, "Take her away, I don't want her."
Oh, yeah. That's definitely so, that postpartum stuff. Ugh.
And let me just give you guys a little heads up. Like, this is probably the worst childhood we'll ever cover on the pod, and we'll get to, you know, happier times, but just want to give you guys a warning. She had a very rough childhood. So her parents were incredibly poor. Like, no hot water, one bathroom on the entire apartment floor to share.
Oof.
She rarely, like, sometimes didn't have clothes or shoes. So basically, they're just existing. They're, like, waiting to die. Clara remembers fondly when they once had chicken for dinner. Like, that's how poor they were. Like, she remembered the one time they had chicken for dinner. So, rough start. And so, her dad, Robert Walter Bow, was a waiter, and Clara said that her dad had a quick, keen mind, all the natural qualifications to make something of himself, but didn't. Everything seemed to go wrong for him, poor darling. And by the time she was 4 and a half, her dad was out of work. And between 1905 and 1923, the family lived at 14 different addresses around Prospect Heights. And Clara's father was often absent because when Clara's mom was 16, she actually fell out of a second story window while reaching to get grapes for her brother.
Oh, and shit.
She suffered a severe head injury.
Yeah.
So she was later diagnosed with psychosis due to epilepsy. And so from her earliest years with dad absent, Clara had learned how to take care of her mom for herself since dad was gone during the seizures, as well as how to deal with Clara's mom's psychotic and hostile episodes. And while she knew her mom couldn't help it, she felt very deprived of her childhood. As a kid, I took care of my mother. She didn't take care of me. So very sad. Very sad start. Bow attended PS 111, 9, and 98. That's public school. And as she grew up, she felt really shy among the other girls. They teased her. You know, she had these worn out clothes, this carrot top hair. You know, she said about her childhood, "I never had any clothes and lots of times didn't have anything to eat. We just lived. That's about all. Girls shunned me because I was so poorly dressed." Aww. So She learns to box. She plays stickball. She's a big tomboy. And this is really, really tragic, though. She actually had a best friend who was a younger boy who lived in her building. And he actually was screaming one day, and she comes running, and he's on fire.
What?
For some reason. And she tried to roll him up in a carpet to stop it, but she couldn't, and he died in her arms.
Oh, God. Because again, what year is this now?
So this is around 1919.
So I'm pretty sure we probably weren't as familiar with stop, drop, and roll at this point.
No. And to have him die in her arms, like that haunted her for life, understandably. Right. So,
so she was like a teenager.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. It's just tragic. Like, it just doesn't get any better. I mean, it will get better, but just rough start. So in 1919, she enrolls in the Bay Ridge High School for Girls. She wore sweaters and old skirts. She didn't want to be treated like a girl. Her mother had a long spell of good health and eventually changed Beau's appearance, cutting her hair more femininely. And Clara said that there was one boy who had always been my pal. He kissed me. I wasn't sore. I didn't get indignant. I was horrified and hurt. I knew I could never go back to being a tomboy.
Oh.
So that'll change. That'll turn you around. You know, I got some attention now. So she turned it around. And meanwhile, the movies became her solace. She's, you know, dealing with her mom's mental health issues and her dad's being absent. Her dad, to his credit, would give her some spare change. And it was a huge escape in movies. She loved Mary Pickford in particular.
Mm.
And she didn't have any girlfriends. School was a heartache. Her home was miserable. But on the silver screen, she found consolation. And she said, for the first time in my life, I knew there was beauty in the world. For the first time, I saw distant lands, serene, lovely homes, romance, nobility, and glamour. And at 16, Beau says she knew she wanted to be a motion pictures actress, even if she was a square, awkward, funny-faced kid. And then she gets the lead in the school play, but her mom was not happy about it and actually made her get a job instead. So she gets this ordinary office job since she dropped out of school her senior year, and she's just a receptionist. So she's reading movie magazines all day, and she's obsessed with the movie industry. And so then again, against her mom's wishes, but with her dad's support, she competes in Brewster Publications Magazine annual nationwide acting contest, Fame and Fortune, in fall of 1921. And in previous years, other contest winners had found work, like in the movies, and in the contest's final screen test, she was up against this like extremely already like seen, experienced woman who did a beautiful piece of acting. But in the January issues, 1922 of Motion Picture Classics, the contest jury concludes she's very young, only 16, but she is full of confidence, determination, and ambition. She is endowed with a mentality far beyond her years. She has a genuine spark of divine fire. But At this time, Clara's mom, Sarah, her conditions worsened. And when she realized her daughter was set for a movie career, her mom told her she would be much better off dead. And one night in February of 1922, Clara awoke to a butcher knife held against her throat by her mother.
Oh, no.
And Clara was able to fend off the attack and locked her mom in her room. And in the morning, you know, Clara would have insomnia for the rest of her life after that, understandably so.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
And like, it's one of those things, too. We've talked about this. Mental health is just so. And of course, back then, we just don't know.
Right.
So had the mom gotten help in some kind of way, probably as soon as, like, you know, she was born, it wouldn't have gotten to this point.
Right.
But, oh, that's so scary and that's so sad because, like, your mother, you know?
Your mom. You go to her for everything, and her dad's gone, and now he had to be around because, you know, her mom had no recollection of the episode. And so later, she was committed to what they call a sanitarium, which just sounds bad, but it's really just a place where there's no stimulus. It's just you kind of chill out by Robert.
Yeah.
And then Clara actually wins the contest a week after this whole incident.
What?
So with the bad comes the good, and she wins this. She won an evening gown and a silver trophy, and the publisher committed to help her gain a role in films, but nothing happened. And Clara's dad told her to haunt Brewster's office located in Brooklyn until they came up with something to get rid of me, or maybe they really meant to give me all the time and were just busy. So Clara was introduced to director Christy Cabine, who cast her in a movie called Beyond the Rainbow, which was produced in late 1921 and released February 19th, 1922. And she did five scenes and impressed the director with her ability to produce tears on call. But guess what? She was cut from the final print.
What?
Yeah. She just can't catch a break. She can't catch a break. She's got this shitty childhood. She gets her big break. This movie's out. The director's impressed, but she's cut from it. She was sick to her stomach, she recalled, and thought her mom was maybe right about the movie business. And so she goes back to her receptionist job. But Salvation came calling, and her dad, to his credit, encourages her to get another movie. And the director of this upcoming movie, Down to the Sea and Ship, sees her picture in a magazine, like the magazine for the contest, and was like, yeah, she looks good. Sure. So random. But he, you know, gets a hold of her, and she gets the gig, and she works for 13 weeks, the equivalent of what's $650 a week, and she's 16 years old, and she's in New Bedford doing this. This is like
life. No, yeah. that's my area where I grew up, like close to it. Like New Bedford's very close to Rhode Island, so. Yeah,
she's
very familiar. So especially for something like that, where I believe, if I remember the movie correctly, it's like one of those, I think it's like a romance drama, and it's about like a whaling family. New Bedford is very much a whaling community. So they actually literally shot it on location in a town where it would actually make sense, which sometimes and very rarely do they do that nowadays, too.
Right.
They just kind of fake it. And so it was obviously a big deal to have like such a big a production happening in a place like that. I mean, especially even now, we would think that's a huge deal because New Bedford is such a smaller community, and it's cool that they would do that. So yeah, no, I love that though. She's just like, I told you I'm a nerd. Great. I'm a nerd.
No, I'm glad that you know it. You know Clara. So yeah, she has so much fun, and she kind of gets a reputation among the crew in the town because she's sneaking out at night and she's hooking up with a lot of men. And
I love her.
Yeah. she's like, she's got
there's
some
so
spice.
Much about her that reminds me of, like, I hate to say it, but like, because it sounds conceited, but me, where it was
no,
like,
no, she really is.
Yeah.
She really is. She's got your hair.
I mean, I got her hair. Let's be real.
You got her hair. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. She's kind of, I mean, yeah, I don't know if that's, it's not offensive. I think she's amazing. So, yeah, you're kind of like Clara Bow.
Like, I can only aspire to be like her. Minus, like, obviously, I didn't have the troubled childhood, but like the covering up, the all that stuff, I totally remember doing that. And then
sneaking out. Yeah.
I mean, maybe a little.
Getting
bit.
A reputation among the crew in the town of New Bedford, right?
I don't think so. I hope not, but you know what? Call me New Bedford.
And this time she makes it on the screen, and this movie is nominated as one of the 10 best films of the year. She gets good reviews and Variety, and then this kind of catapults her into being cast as a flapper girl in tons of flapper movies. We've got like The Saturday Night Kid, Hula, The Plastic Age, Man Trap, The Wild Party. Just look up her thing and you'll see like almost every cover is her like half naked as a flapper or a party girl.
Well,
she's very much cast into the certain role.
I know we talked a little bit about this, and I don't know if you're going to go into it, but also when back then they didn't have, like, we talked about it with Faye Ray about how she, like, the work that people would do, they would do so many pictures like and work them so hard because like you would do an insane amount, and they didn't have any like laws or anything like that. It was like, oh, you need to,
you're a player, your contract, your contract,
right? We talked about all if you want a refresher on that, we talked about that a lot in Faye Ray's episode. And did you get to 1924?
I'm in 1923 right now.
Okay, okay.
What do you have in 1924? Do you have something
Because Faye Ray and Clara would actually kind of run into each other, because they both were up for the weird name Wampa's Baby Stars.
Wait, I don't have this. What? Tell me more.
So remember with Faye Ray, there was the Western Association of Motion Picture Advertisers. And that was where they would select young actresses who they thought were on the threshold of movie stardom.
Right.
Faye Ray won it in 1926, but Clara would win it in 1924.
Oh.
So they actually, like, literally were running in the same circles. So these girls must have, like, at least have been aware. And I'm sure, I don't know if they ever were in any pictures together. Yeah, because there's no way the two of them didn't, like, at least they went to parties together or something. Keep in mind, a lot of pictures back then probably had, like, one woman in it. And then, so, you know. Yeah. Or it would be like when you're of that level, they typically wouldn't put, unless the story revolved around like two big female stars. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite like that. So one would have to play more of like the lesser character than the other. And I'm sure both of their, neither of the, however it was run by their, the production companies, they didn't want to make either of them seem lesser than the other.
Right.
So kind of they probably wouldn't put them in the same picture. Yeah.
No. One sheriff only. There's only room for one of us.
And only it's one of their name. There's only one Clara. Woman's name on the marquee, and it can either be her or her. But that's it. Exactly. No one can share it.
But so getting back into it, I kind of jumped ahead because on January 5th, 1923, Sarah, Clara's mom, dies at the age of 43
from
her epilepsy. And woof, when relatives gathered for the funeral, Clara was so upset that she, quote, went crazy and tried to jump into the grave to be with her, shouting that they were hypocrites and that they hadn't loved or cared for her mother when she was alive. So, big formative moment for Clara. She's lost her mom, even though her mom was really never, you know, the loving mom that, you know, we would hope. Well, but yeah.
Well, I think it's not to say that she probably didn't have these loving mom moments, but unfortunately, she also had such an extreme in the other direction where she's literally holding a knife to her throat and making her feel unsafe and not able to provide for her. A lot of those, it comes with the circumstances of not getting the support that you need. And so from that, I'm sure like there were, if not all the moments, but at least some of the moments where she loved her daughter enough that her daughter would grieve the loss of her. But it also, it's very complicated. Like it's very, very complicated.
Very complicated. And her dad recognized this and saw. So this is before she was in all the movies. Her dad saw that she was distraught and kind of directionless. So he actually, to his credit, steps in and tries to help her get an agent. So yeah, again, I skipped ahead. Before she was in all these flapper movies, she doesn't have an agent. So she goes to Hollywood to meet B.P. Schulberg. She goes on a train. She has insomnia. She's playing this one record, March of the Wooden Soldier, over and over on the way over. This guardian, Maxine Altman, who's her interim agent, is with her. Drives her crazy. She can't sleep. She's playing this one record on the way over the whole way across the country. They're just such a hot mess. So when they get there, the Schulberg guy opens the door, gives her one look up and down. Her hair's crazy. Her clothes are wrinkled. And he says, nope, that's it. Slams the door. And Maxine, to her credit, the interim agent and guardian, talks him into giving her a test. That's a good agent. And Clara cries on cue. She's happy on cue. She has no makeup on and she doesn't have any good clothes on. And I guess she puts gum back in her head.
What?
She takes gum out, puts it in her head, and then puts it back in her mouth. And he's like, you know what? You win. Like, good for you. You win. I'll give you a shot.
And I'm confused by some of that, but okay. Yeah. The gum thing, I'm like, what?
The gum in her head, It's like, what? And she's got this adorable accent, by the way, this Brooklyn accent. It's so adorable. I can just imagine her. I don't want to even try doing it.
Did she have a high-pitched voice?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And it was super cutesy. Like, I don't even know how to give impressions.
Well, I know how to do it because it's Well, it's only because of who she's based on or who a character is later based on her.
They said it was. So it was, fast-forwarding, Max Fleischer's cartoon character Betty Boop was modeled after Bo's appearance, but after the voice of entertainer Helen Kane. The Joop girl. Yes.
Yeah, where she would just do that whole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the voice, and especially the hairstyle. When you see Clara Bow next to Betty Boop, you're like, oh, I see it.
Right. But then if you look up Helen Kane real quick, because like she does look much like, look up Helen Kane real quick. You'll see the second picture.
I'm sure it's a combination of the two of them. And it's probably more Helen Kane. But oh, yeah. Look at her.
It's a little more Helen Kane.
The one where her eyes are up where she's looking like, oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, she's so cute. But we should do Helen Keane at some point. But yeah. It's an amalgamation of both. You're not wrong. But she has this adorable voice. So now she's, you know, after that crazy audition on the spur of the moment, she's in the system. How could you not be? So, yeah. So like I said earlier, so in 1923 to 1924, they work her to the bone. Claire is in 12 silent films. They send, you know, pinup pics of her all over town. And you could rent the players and buy out portions of the contract. So she went all over the place doing these silent films back to back, just working her to the bone. Yep. And during this time, she goes to a ton of parties and she really wasn't impressed with like the A-list life. She really didn't give a fuck about it. She wasn't
good
into
for
it.
Her.
But what she was into was men plus alcohol plus a beach.
No flaws.
No flaws, Your Honor. I see nothing wrong with this. And hijinks would ensue. And the public just loves her. They eat her up. She's this party girl. She's this flapper. She's the hottest jazz baby in films, they call her. She's shocking and immoral. They love it. She's 18. She's living life. She's living high. She's killing it. She's just having the time of her life, Red. She's you. I mean, come on. That's who she is.
Well, listen, I haven't gotten the beach and the men going on right now.
Not
but...
yet, but you will in the summer. There's a lake. So, okay, now she's in this movie at Paramount called Dancing Mothers. She's cast as this character, Kittens Westcourt, which is a porn name if I ever heard one. And she gets
what,
great reviews.
Stars alongside Red Caboose.
Red Caboose and Kittens Westcourt. And she gets great reviews. She, to her credit, like, she's so genuine in herself in all of her roles. And that was a big thing people loved her for. She was just herself. And her work and her home life start to combine because she meets one Victor Fleming of, Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz directorial fame. And
never heard of it.
Yeah, never heard of him. Just a little dude named Victor Fleming. Now, he's 20 years older. And I gotta say, even though he was a womanizer, he had met his match. Because she wanted to see other men. And he became very territorial and wanted her, and she doesn't care. She would leave other people's houses and end up, you know, going on a date and go to bed with one guy and wake up with another. Men just always wanted to like keep her to themselves, and out of that you can tell, you know, there was some self-esteem issues. She's very sad. She came from this really broken childhood, and Victor picks up on it because she had really never fully faced head-on the demons of her past. And
well,
her dad,
it's kind of hard to when you're faced with, like, you're in survival mode. You're not in I have time to like kind of deal with this. You're just like, I need to find food to eat. I need to find something warm to wear so I don't freeze and like certain temperatures. It's hard to be able to get the help like you need to deal with those sort of things. And
absolutely.
Again, she's growing up during the Great Depression. Like, this is,
I'm doing a lot of Great Depression era people. I'm just realizing. Red, I really
am. Are you trying to tell us something? Are you okay?
I know. Am I okay? I don't know. I feel like we're all in a Great Depression in LA right now.
I mean,
this whole industry is crumbling. I love it. No, just kidding. I hate it. So speaking of past, so her dad comes out to live with her in LA, and I absolutely love this little detail, Red. So she buys him a laundromat just to give him something to do.
Oh.
And she, I love this so much, she would roller skate through the Paramount studio lot and make men take their shirts off so her dad had laundry to do. Can you imagine?
I mean,
this cute little thing, 18, 19 years old. I would take my shirt off if I was, you know.
I was about
to
say,
please,
of course they would take their
shirts
off for her. They're probably like, what else do you want? And it's like,
yeah, please. I'll do anything. Oh my God. But, you know, her dad, he just has no interest in this. So he kind of runs the laundromat to the ground. He just wants to drink and meet women. And so he runs it to the ground. But speaking of publicity stunts, Paramount has some fun publicity stunts for her. Like before, you know, Paris Hilton and the little dog craze, she goes around with dogs that matched her hair color, that bright, like, red hair.
I didn't know this. I love that.
Publicity. It's like she had an oriental rug put at the bottom of her pool. I don't know how they did that, but whatever. Fun. And then she had dirt put in her room for her dogs in one room of her house because she didn't want them outside. Her bed had a mirror on the canopy.
But, I mean, There's just the part of me that's like, okay, so the purpose was for these dogs to use that as a bathroom? Girl, come on. That's got to smell. Clara.
I know. Clara, come on, honey. But Paramount loved the publicity, the dogs, the rugs, the mirror on the bed canopy.
At least you never have to vacuum that rug.
Yeah, right? So, you know, it's already got chlorine in it. But
it's nice and clean. Moldy, but clean.
To her credit, though, she's very down to earth, a very down to earth person. She has no ego on set. She gets the work done. She sits on the ground, talks to everybody. She's very down to earth. So I do love that she does this. And actually, there's this fun story. So she, at one point, was getting 300,000 letters in a year. She had a whole like train car reserved just for her fan mail. And a little boy had a popcorn stand at the Venice Pier. And he writes her a letter and asks, you know, hey, I'm going to have like a Clara Bow Day. Like, can you come on out and help me sell it? And she does. She doesn't care about the publicity of it all. She genuinely wanted to meet this boy and help sell all the popcorn. Not for self-interest, just because she was genuinely interested in this little boy. She helps him sell it all out. Just that's the kind of person she was. So I just love that story that she just did it. She showed up. And, yeah. And that's just so adorable. So, okay.
And again,
so,
but, we're in like, what, 19 what?
Well, now we're getting into her famous moniker towards 19, like 25, 26, because we're entering Eleanor Glenn. She's this eccentric writer who wore fur coats. She's in her late 50s. She's kind of a writer of mommy porn, like, you know, like the precursor to 50 Shades and all that.
I was about to say, was this like before that? It's like,
yeah.
But it's, I mean, so it was like 25 Shades of Black, 26. 25 Shades of White, and then it turns into 50 Shades of Gray. Like, that's how it goes?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. She's kind of this Eleanor Glenn person. She's like this authority on sex appeal. And so she writes, she calls Clara Bow it, quote unquote. And she writes this novel called It, which is then turned into a movie for Paramount for Clara to star in. And this movie is actually on Netflix. It's called It. And there's also the world's cutest baby in it. Fun fact. So watch it. It's on Netflix. And she is now officially coined, because of the movie It, she is the official It girl at age 21.
Oh.
So because of this movie, which I didn't realize. So it's because Eleanor wrote this novel that Paramount bought up right away to put Clara in, that she is the official It girl, the first one. So age 21, jazz age in full swing, and her love life is spicy. She's living high. She's the It girl of Hollywood. So she came from nothing to becoming the It girl, the Taylor Swift of her time. So love this for her. And so she meets this man named Gary Cooper, and Clara makes them write him into this movie Wings, which was the first movie to win the Academy Award for Best Picture before they were called the Oscars. Very fun.
Oh.
She's now balancing Gary Cooper, Victor Fleming. She sometimes, you know, there were some in this movie pilots that were extras. She would hook up with them. She would hook up with the hotel employees. Like, a lot of men thought they were the only one. And someone said in the hotel to her that, I think you ought to give them tickets. Because there were so many men coming and going to see her. She was playing all of them.
I like, love it's her.
Crazy. There was like a line just passing ships. They thought they were the only one, but she's just playing. She's living the life. She's the It girl. She can do whatever the fuck she wants. So she fell in now with like this rich Broadway star who was full of himself named Harry Richmond. And he globs on to Clara. She's his ticket into the movies, and the publicity hounds are after her. Like, he wanted in, and Clara just needed physical affection desperately. She almost had like a borderline sex addiction, but
I feel
the public loved her.
I'm kidding, sorry.
I think he might be the reincarnation.
No, I think it's slowed down a little bit. I haven't brought it to Canada yet, so
not yet.
We might need to cut
we're
that,
waiting for your Clara Bow moment. You're gonna be the It girl of
moments,
Toronto.
Moments, darling.
Moments. Sorry. So the public loves her, though. They wanted to be her. It fit her image on screen of the party girl, the flapper, the do good girl. You know, but she's kind of running to the ground. You know, she did, was it like 46 silent films, 11 talkies. She's just burning the candle at both ends, and so. As we see a lot in Hollywood, like, she needs a break. But the studio was like, haven't you spent the last few months in bed?
Oh my God.
He said that. Wink, wink. And they threw her into another movie and she started to drink. And she had actually never drank before then, believe it or not. So she's working 16-hour work days, drinking and cruising the streets for men, which is very, very dangerous, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm not. Okay, I know we joke about me doing that. No.
No, no, no. That's not you.
No.
So as you can see, it can only go on for so long before she does end up. She's always professional and down to earth on set, but you can only go so long before you lose it. And she does. She loses it. She loses her shit. She's a hot mess. She goes crazy on set and she was hospitalized for exhaustion, which, you know, you see that all the time now when it's usually like code for drugs or something, but it literally was exhaustion.
I mean, for some people, it literally is, because when you're pushed to that level, plus now you have, let's be honest, there's a family history of mental illness, plus her alcoholism, because it sounds like her dad had some drinking issues and stuff like that. So with those two things combined, plus the work schedule that she's under, also not coming to terms with her past of her being a childhood. And I think some of this addictive behavior, sometimes it's not always to alcohol. Sometimes it is to other outlets such as sex. Or drugs. Yeah. So
absolutely.
It sounds like she was just kind of going. And at a certain point, something has to give. And it sounds like she gave. Like she just gave up.
And God, the poor thing. Like, she raised her hand and no one listened to her and nobody was really advocating
for her. And how old
is
she at this point? What
around
year is it?
25. She's around 25. 25? Yeah.
That's a quarter-life crisis, not a midlife crisis.
Yeah, seriously. Like, this should be later, not 25, when your star is rising and you're the biggest thing in Hollywood. So she's
the OG Britney.
She's the OG Britney. Yes, she's the OG Britney. You're the it girl. She's the OG Britney. And so she's hospitalized for exhaustion and she gets out. And the next few years were kind of full of three things: many men, mental instability, and movie magic. And rumors were that she had, quote, the entire U.S. football team. They were called the Thundering Herd. So that's just a funny thing to think of, this huge Hollywood it star like going to the frat parties and hooking up with the entire USC football team. Who knows if it's true or not, but that was what was, you know, being perpetuated.
I do know that there was a lot of stories about her and these wild escapades, but I know for a fact a lot of it is embellished her. She did show up to like these events like this where it seems unlikely, because also she's only 25 and college age people are around 20, so it's not like this crazy thing for
she
her
might
to be
24
there
or 23, but still, like, yeah.
But again, it's like, it's not out of the, like, here's also somebody who has been having to take care of other people. She hasn't really had a chance to kind of let loose, so now she has the money, the means, the opportunity. She's gonna have some fun.
Absolutely.
But again,
did she?
Because we're in the 19.
And she,
you know,
was proposed to like all the time.
But that's the thing. And of course, I mean, who wouldn't? Because it's fucking Clara Bowl. Like, you just want.
People were like, this is a publicity stunt. And some of them were publicity stunts. But yeah.
But when it's this era too, where they're policing women and stuff like that and being like, oh, you have to be proper. Of course, they're going to make it a much bigger story than when she's doing all these things that I'm sure, like, at least half of it's true, if not most of it. But at the same time, they're going to really build it up, because here's this woman who's acting out and is selling stories, because who else is doing that? And also, who else is brave enough to kind of live like that in this era? So
absolutely. So poor thing. Like, it doesn't get any better, because now we're, so, you know, I gave you the overview of how many she did, but now we're finally going into the talkies. And we're just getting into the talkies around now. So she's doing all these 40 some silent films, but now she's going into talkies. And let me remind you, she has this thick Brooklyn accent and she had to work with a dialect coach and she absolutely fucking hated it. And she was given 2 weeks to prepare. Some actresses were given months, maybe years to prepare. She was given 2 weeks to prepare.
Jesus.
And she was worked so hard and had to take, you know, do many more takes than normal, because when you're in a silent film, you know, usually it's one and done for her. Or at least it was with her. She was professional. Well, one and done was usually all it took.
You were saying earlier, right? Yeah. Earlier when she would go audition, all she had to do was like cry on command, look happy.
And look happy and look
pretty. Right.
Yeah.
Because you have to emote very physically for a silent film. But once you have to talk, that's a whole other emotional range.
Accent, which she hated. She hated the talkies. She hated it. She had to do many more takes, working harder than ever. And she's, you know, still mentally not doing well. And she's continually being typecast as the flapper, the party girl. And she had to do musicals, which really stressed her out. Ugh. So, poor thing. And then, just to add a cherry on top, another scandal breaks because Clara has an appendectomy and she and the married doctor hooked up while she was recovering. Oh. And the wife of the doctor sues Clara for being a home wrecker. And Clara,
is that a thing you can sue for?
Apparently.
Jesus.
And Clara tries to fix it while she's in Dallas on the down low, but the tabloids go crazy for her. You know, she's the most recognizable person in the country. You know, she gets 300,000 fan mail letters in a year. People start to think of her now as reckless, silly, a joke. And she hires a new secretary named Daisy, since her dad apparently married her former secretary and ran off with her, which was very annoying for her, especially because of what's about to come.
Oh, okay. Let's get into it.
Because they become fast friends, and but she wasn't happy during this time, and she wants to find a new man, and enter actor Rex Bell, singing sailor in one of her movies. He's from the Midwest. He's conservative. He's industrious. He's calm. And he notices, because he's got a level mind about him and cares about her and loves her, that Daisy, Clara's secretary, was stealing money from her. And she blackmails her and says, okay, I want $250,000 or I'm spilling all of your tea. Because she has all of Clara's personal letters that she was supposed to burn. And she was going to spill it all and bring Clara and Paramount to shame. Like, that was her job. Was she knows all where the dead bodies are. She has all the secrets, all the personal letters, all the affairs, all the secret Paramount goings. She was going to do it. She was going to do it. And betrayal, if ever there was. And Daisy faces 25 grand larceny charges. She stole, I think it ended up being $30,000. But she only got convicted on one, for stealing Clara's white fur coat. And this is at the start of the Great Depression.
Oof.
And Daisy still sells Clara's tails. But
that
guess what? The studio didn't care. Because Clara didn't have an image to destroy. Because she was never a good girl.
So be so bad, it's good. I love it.
Exactly. Daisy goes to jail, but Clara has a nervous breakdown. So that's the other side of the coin. Like, great, it didn't really hurt me, but I'm still having a nervous breakdown. And, you know, she's in her mid-20s. And Rex is like, all right, that's it. I'm taking you away from Hollywood. And thankfully, because she needed it, they go to Nevada and they build a ranch. And she actually dyes all the cows to match her hair color. They're cuter like that, she said. So she's on the ranch in Nevada with her and Rex, and they get married in this tiny ceremony. But Hollywood wanted her back. You know, Mary Pickford wanted to be in a movie with her. Howard Hughes offered her a 3-picture deal. But she was like, no, 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 this is my time to rest. And so she spends 2 years resting. She gains weight. She horseback rides. She plays stickball. She ranches. She does come back eventually for a picture called Call Her Savage, which is absolutely terrible, and makes one more movie called Hoopla. And then she bailed on the movies and she wanted to raise a family. And she's 27 and she's out. And she has 2 little boys and she lives successfully out of the limelight for 10 years. Eventually, Rex and Clara separate, and she had a series of visits to mental institutions for the insomnia that she had from her childhood. And she becomes a little withdrawn, doesn't really have much of a social life. She became a voracious reader, though, and loved poetry. She took an interest in politics because Rex was in politics for a little bit. You know, she loved TV. She loved Marilyn Monroe, the new It Girl. Mm-hmm. And her last public appearance was actually at Rex's funeral. Oh. And she got her star on the Walk of Fame in 1960 on Vine Street, if anybody wants to see it. And she will always be known as a symbol of the era, the hottest jazz baby in the world. She dies quietly in her sleep on September 26th, 1965, of a heart attack. But her legacy, again,
she got the star, the Walk of Fame. I think she's one of the first people, like, in the first class to get that. In 1994, she had an image on the postage stamp, the U.S. postage stamp. And again, she was modeled, but Betty Boop kind of came from her and Helen Caine. She was played by Jennifer Tilly in the motion picture Return to Babylon. Margot Robbie plays a fictional character based on her in the terrible film Babylon in 2022. The lead character from the movie The Artist, which won the Academy Award in 2011, was based on Clara. And the closing track, again, on Taylor's upcoming album, The Tortured Poets Department, is titled Clara Bow. So to finish with two quotes, the first is a quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald about Clara, and he says, "This girl was the real thing, someone to stir every pulse in the nation." Mm-hmm. And the second's from Clara herself, "I'm a curiosity in Hollywood. I'm a big freak because I'm myself." So, Clara Bow's sex symbol, natural talent, resilience, sweet, and one of the most beautiful freaks to grace the Hollywood silver screen. I absolutely love that for you.
Aww,
what a legend.
What
she
a legend.
Is just such a genuine, original it girl and such a natural talent. So sweet and resilient. Just coming from where she came from to where she ended. I could see why Taylor wanted to write a song about her. Like, my gosh, I didn't know any of this. So, I'm surprised. I mean, you know so much more, Red.
I mean,
like,
not like a lot of this I was surprised by and things like yeah. that. I thought she and him stayed married until he died of the heart attack.
Apparently not. Apparently they separated.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking like, oh, there is hope for us girls who like, you
I know,
live
we
rebelliously.
I read that they, yeah, they got
That's
separated.
Okay.
But it was amicable. It wasn't, you know, it was a peaceful life. And thank God he like took her out of that life that she was headed, because she could have, you know, she probably would have not lived much longer the rate she was going. Like,
I mean,
poor thing.
I know. And the other thing, too, is I know that one woman wasn't the only person to try and blackmail her for living the life that she did. I know there was also a tabloid person who tried to blackmail her, and Oof. He actually got arrested for it and Oof. Went to prison because, yeah, Oof. They used to accuse her of all kinds of things. And like, when you look back in the past and people are like, oh, but people didn't have sex back then. Oh, yes, they did. Oh,
oh yes,
yes,
they
did. And especially
Ask
like,
Clara.
Yeah, well, there's also that whole golden age where people were kind of right before the Great Depression. There always seems to be like this good moment of richness and other stuff. And then it's followed immediately by a large sink in the financial stuff.
Off the cliff.
Right.
Yeah.
And she got to experience both. So even though she wasn't quite able to use those riches or anything like that, because when she was growing up in it, she wasn't one of those. Because of the success she found, she was able to finally do that, which made bigger news because so many other people were like, oh, here's something that's entertaining. Here's something that. And
right.
Unfortunately, though, there comes a lot of pressure, especially in that time where she's one of the rare cases where she wasn't slighted because of it. Well, I mean, she was, but like she was able to actually still use that to her advantage, where like, again, somebody tries to take advantage of it, but then yeah. it's like, oh no, she has no reputation to destroy. Nice try.
Like Kim Kardashian, like all the sex tapes, it's like, it helps your career nowadays, you know? It's like, so what of it, you know?
Right.
She's
and
kind
like
of the original.
Right. Which is crazy to think about, because if you look back, a lot of times people are like, oh, if it feels good, stop. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
not the case with her, that she, for better or for worse, pursued some of these more like bohemian kind of style of living life as she wanted. And
I love that.
I just think that's so great. And like, you know, obviously she's a bit of a style icon too.
Yes.
She was just known for like that. Her,
she's so cute.
I believe, I could be wrong, but part of the reason there is a, they call it like a bow lip, I think is in part due to her.
Oh, wait, I'm glad you mentioned that.
Oh.
Real quick, fun fact. Since she was so poor, you know, growing up, she didn't have makeup, obviously. So I guess she would take like the whatever stuck the wallpaper to the wall and use that for her iconic red lip.
That can't be good.
The adhesive of the wallpaper in her apartment to make her iconic red lip. But yes, that's, isn't that crazy? That cannot be good for her.
Oh, well, we've been learning about a little bit of like that era, because they were so poor. People would do things like that, which definitely wasn't safe. But like,
no.
Another thing they used to do was to fake having stockings. They would use like some kind of like black like not marker, but some kind of way to mark the back of their legs. They draw a line so it looked like they were wearing stockings.
Whoa.
And they weren't, but they just couldn't afford to buy stockings. So instead they draw the line up the back of the leg. And I'm sure she probably did that too. And it looked
I'm sure she did anything.
Because if she's taking things off the wall to give her the red lip, which was red lips have been iconic for so long.
That's where Taylor gets it, I bet.
Honestly, well, it always comes back around. And for anyone who thinks they can't wear a red lip, no. There are so many different styles of red and so many different. I mean, I think personally, given the name, I think red's good for everybody. Just saying.
Wink, wink.
Oh, my God. You should do a tribute look. Like, you should copy. Oh,
I will be.
Clarabeau.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
so
I will
cute.
Be. Don't worry. Actually, side thing. I think this week we're studying decades and actually practicing it. So I will.
1920s?
I think 1920s is first.
Oh, my God.
So
we
should
study Clara for sure.
Oh, for sure. And I'm going to literally tell my teacher, like, I just studied Clarabeau.
Oh, extra credit. Yeah.
Yeah, because also I'm thinking of doing a makeup artist kind of inspired by these times. So we'll see, though. And I don't want to give anything away.
Red. Oh, my God. I'm so glad we did this. Oh,
I know.
Clara, I love that for you. Everybody, go look up Clara. You're going to hear her on Taylor's upcoming album anyway. You may as well learn about her.
Honestly, so, she's about to, like, Clarabeau is about to blow up again.
It really is.
Like, what, almost like 20,
2 months
or, sorry, 100 years after her initial.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly.
And for those who don't believe, things don't come back around again.
Oh, they do. So bring back the good vibes to us, guys. Rate, review, subscribe, and follow the Facebook page. And we love you.
Love you guys.
Bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on I Love That For You. Our theme song is by Vaudeville and used with permission. Our cover art is by Jenny Lamb, edited to the best of our abilities by Kelly and Red. If you want us to spotlight someone, have questions, or just want to say hi, email us at ilovethatforyoupod@gmail.com or join us on Instagram at ilovethatforyoupod to join the love fest and see what else we get up to. Episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, basically wherever else you listen. We appreciate all your love, and if you want to help support the show, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts. This helps us spread the love and reach more people. Thanks for listening. We love you.